This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and wonderful and oh-so-curious friends. You are looking marvelous. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and filmies a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and other experts as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, critical thinking, creativity, and cooperation. Right now, please welcome to the show my co-host, my partner in exploration, the Admiral of Adventure, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson.
Hello, Jed. How are you today?
I am wonderful. It is a beautiful day and another time for us to solve some problems.
Yes, and we have such an exciting show today. It's going to be tons of fun, but before I give it away, why don't you spin the wheel and let's see what's happening.
Here we go!
How do you diagnose someone?
How do you diagnose someone? I have no idea. I'm really curious.
Well, I think this is one of the coolest shows because I wanted to be a doctor when I was a kid. And think about this. Looking at a sick person, this is exactly what we're talking about. Solving a problem, right?
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
So we have the amazing guest today, Dr. Rajani LaRocca. She is a physician and a children's author, and she's here to tell us how you diagnose someone.
Hey, welcome to the show, Dr. Rajani.
Hi, Jed. Hi, Jennifer. I'm so excited to be here with you.
So I've been to the doctor billions of times, and, you know, this is a thing that you all, of course, go to school for 4 years and all these kinds of things. But I think that this is like one of the biggest problem-solving jobs in the world. You just have to see a person, look at them, and then figure out what's wrong with them.
That's right. And that's why I always loved it. I think it's really fun to help people, but it's also kind of like solving a mystery every day.
I think it is too, although I have to tell you, I'm not crazy about having someone look at me like a puzzle, like they have to figure me out.
I'm not sure I figure out people. I just try and figure out what's wrong with people.
Oh, that's a good distinction. So where do you start? Like what are the first things that you do when you go to the doctor that give you clues to what's going on?
Yes. Okay. So I will tell you the first thing we do when we see somebody is we figure out whether they look sick or not. That's it. That's the first thing you have to do, because if somebody is really sick, you're not going to mess around with asking them too many questions. You're going to start like figuring out all their, you know, vital signs and things like that immediately and getting them the help they need. But if somebody just looks kind of a little bit under the weather and otherwise doesn't look that sick, then you can take some time and figure out what's going on.
But what is it? What does it mean when you look sick? Like, what are you looking for when you think they look sick?
So it's a bunch of things. Are they having a hard time breathing? Do they look like they can't really open their eyes or they're not sure what is going on around them? Do they look like they're in a lot of pain? All of those things would make me say, forget asking them too many questions. Let's figure out what's going on right now to make them better right away.
I guess if you see somebody with stuff running out of their nose, that might be an indication that they're not well.
Yes, but just a runny nose is not enough to say they're sick.
So you mentioned vital signs. So these are the things that when you go to the doctor, these are the first things they look like. Temperature. What are all the vital signs you look at?
So weight and height, which actually are really important for everybody, but especially for kids. Because that's part of the indications of how well somebody is growing. Okay. Temperature, if they're coming in. Actually, we measure people's temperature all the time anyway. Their heart rate, their blood pressure, which is the difference in the pressure between when the heart is squeezing and when it is relaxing. And there are certain ranges that are normal depending on how old you are. sometimes you measure a respiratory rate, but for the most part, you rely on just looking to see whether somebody seems to be breathing fast or not. Oh, okay. And then an oxygen saturation. Nowadays, we measure that every single time.
Yeah, that's the little pulse ox thing, right?
Exactly, exactly.
I'm so confused because measuring your oxygen, that's measuring how much oxygen gets into your lungs. And that's, you know, I always thought of oxygen coming in and out of the body through your nose and your mouth. But then to measure it, the doctor put something on the end of my finger and it doesn't even like break the skin. It's just like sitting there. And I'm like, you're just making believe this is measuring something, right?
Yeah, it's really cool. It was actually something that was invented, I believe, when I was in medical school in the 90s. And it is something that shines light through the blood vessels. And depending on how much oxygen is dissolved in the blood, it sends something to a sensor that can tell you how much the oxygen saturation of the blood is. And for normal people, it is 95% and above. You and I, probably it's 99 to 100%.
Wow. Who would have had the idea to think we got to measure this oxygen level and let's do it by shooting light through somebody's finger?
It's really cool.
I mean, now I'm going to have to look that up because I wonder if it has something to do with, you know, the reflective, how much reflects back. Like, is your blood thicker, so to speak, if it has more oxygen? Now my physics brain is thinking. We're going to have to look this up. Kids, go back and figure that out. Isn't that cool?
Before we had those machines, we used to have to draw blood from an artery, which is not good, and then go run something called a blood gas, in which you would learn what the partial pressure of oxygen in the blood was. That is not pleasant. You cannot do that in your office. Like, you have to be in a hospital setting. You certainly can't do that at home.
No, I remember hearing testing blood gases when I was a kid, you know, and my brother was in the hospital. Oh, that's cool. So technology is cool because now you don't have to have a stick. You can, you know, where they take your blood, you can just put the little thing on your finger.
Yes. And that's one indication that's important. We still do blood gases in people who are very sick.
Right.
Because it gives us more information than just the oxygen saturation. But the oxygen saturation is fantastic. And just being able to shine a light through your finger is easy.
Wow.
So one of the other things is you listen to people's chests. What are you listening for? I always wonder that, you know, with the stethoscope.
Okay, well, let me back up a second there.
Okay.
I'll tell you. Let me back up. So first we do the vital signs. And as long as the vital signs are okay, or whatever they may show us, then the second thing we do is we listen to people, not to their lungs yet. We just listen to what they have to say, like what their symptoms are. And, you know, doctors are criticized a lot because I think a lot of doctors don't listen to people for very long before they start talking. But ideally, you just sit there and listen to what brought somebody into your office and you learn about the history of what their symptoms are. And then you can ask specific questions to kind of qualify their answers. Like if they say, oh, my belly hurts, you can say, well, does it feel like a burning? Does it feel like sharp? Does it feel like something is, you know, sitting on your belly? That kind of thing. And then you can ask related questions like, oh, there are, you know, lots of things in your belly. Do you feel nauseous? Have you been able to eat? That kind of thing. And then we usually ask a series of questions called the review of systems, which is like everything head to toe. We ask everybody everything to make sure that we're not missing something. Like you may have a belly ache, but also maybe, you know, your back hurts too. And that might indicate something.
Okay.
So this sounds like it's really important to be honest with your doctor and not sit back and say, I don't want to make a big deal out of this.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's really important to be honest. And, you know, sometimes one of the things that we're trying to get at when we ask questions and when we listen to people's answers is what are they worried about? Because a lot of times you can tell someone, I don't think there's anything serious going on. But if they're worried about one specific thing and you don't tell them, you don't think that's what's going on, they're not going to feel better. And so a lot of times when people seem particularly, you know, concerned, I'll say, well, what are you worried about? What do you think is going on? And then they will tell me something that is what they're scared of. And then I will say, okay, well, here's what I think, and here are the ways we're going to figure out if that's what's going on.
Do you ever have a and this is going to sound like I'm making a joke, but I don't mean to be, but do you ever have a situation where someone goes in with a mom or a dad, and you're asking the child a question about how they're feeling, and the mom and the dad just keep answering for them, and you feel like turning to the mom and dad, say, can you let the kid talk for himself? I need to know how he's feeling. I don't need to know what you think he's feeling.
So I'm not a doctor for children, even though I write for children. But I definitely have situations where somebody brings a family member in with them, and the family member is doing all the answering. And because I deal with adults, I try and say politely, oh, I actually really need to hear from so-and-so because they're my patient. And actually with adults especially, we don't allow somebody else to come into the room unless the person who is your patient says it's okay. Because we want the information from the patient themselves.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay, so step three, what's the third thing you do?
Okay, it gets to what you asked me about, Jennifer, which is about what do we listen for? Step three is the physical exam. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, like when you go for a checkup, we kind of look at everything, right? We like feel everything, listen to everything. But if you come in with specific symptoms, we may focus our exam on that part. So when we're listening to people's lungs, we know what normal lungs sound like. You just hear air going in and out like that. And when we listen to people's lungs, we're listening for any extra sounds. So sometimes you hear a wheeze. So you hear like a sound at the end when people are exhaling. And sometimes when people have like pneumonia or something like that, you can actually hear crackles or pops. Ooh. You hear like crunchy things.
That doesn't sound good in the lungs.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. And a lot of times people are like, I feel crackling over here. And you're like, oh yeah, you're right. So that's what you're listening for. And, you know, when I was in medical school, we only ever listened to each other to begin with, right? And like we would go home and listen to our roommates, and everybody was normal. And I was like, oh, I'm like never going to hear anything abnormal. And then you go to the hospital and you're like, okay, no, now I understand what it sounds like when something is abnormal.
Did you get embarrassed that like the first time you heard something that was different and jump up and go, yes, yes, yes. And the person go, wait a minute.
Yes. I was like, whoa. But, I mean, it was always a bad sign when the medical students were interested in you because it's like, wait a minute, that's not good. Because if you were normal, we would be bored. And then my poor husband, we were engaged at the time, and he was like, you know, the non-medical person around. And we in medical school, we practiced drawing each other's blood. We were,
I was going to, yeah.
But he had really nice veins. We would come home and we'd like look at his veins and be like, that looks like it would be easy. And he's like, stop looking at my arms. You vampires, what's wrong with you?
So can I ask one more question about this? So you listen to the front of the chest, but you also listen to the back. Are you listening for different things?
So the front of the chest, we're usually listening for the heart. Okay. And the heart has specific sounds. That bump, 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 that sound, that is the sound of different valves closing in the heart. And if there are any extra sounds, that might mean that a valve is leaky or a valve is too tight, or that there's a hole somewhere in the heart, that kind of thing. You can hear the lungs in the front a little bit, kind of at the very top of the chest. But most of the time when we're listening to your back, we're listening to your lungs there.
Okay. Yeah.
What are you listening for when you listen to somebody's belly?
Good.
Oh, that's a good one. So, you know, the bowels make normal sounds too. They're always moving, right? They're moving to just move food along, and they have these normal kind of gurgly sounds that are, you know, fine. And as long as you can hear those, and when you press on the belly, it doesn't hurt too much, you can feel pretty satisfied that whatever is going on in the belly is nothing too bad. But it's scary when you try and listen to vowel sounds and there are none there. That means that something is going on that has stopped all that kind of normal action in the vowels. And that would make you a little bit more concerned.
Is it concerning when you're sitting at the breakfast table early in the morning and your beautiful wife turns to you and said, "What's that noise coming out of you?" And it's coming from my belly. And it's like, I don't know.
Maybe you're hungry.
That's not concerning. That means you're hungry.
Okay.
She should be flattered because it means her cooking is probably good.
Well, we'll talk about that after the show.
So is there a step four? So we've done three steps. So is the next step to just go looking for whatever they came in? Like if they say my arm hurts, then you look at the arm, or what's the next step?
Yeah. So you examine the parts of the body that are kind of involved in what you're concerned about. And, then after you've done your examination, and so the examination is of course about looking at it, sometimes about listening to it, oftentimes about touching. Sometimes it's about smell, which is weird, but it's true. Yeah. You know, like if somebody has a wound and it smells really bad, like not good. Right. That kind of thing. And in the past, not now, I will say this now, in the past, taste used to be part of what we did too. Like not tasting people, but like tasting like urine and stuff like that. That was like a bad, you know, that was the olden days before we had labs. Yeah. But not now. I don't taste anything anymore.
I don't think we missed that. Or you probably don't miss that part of diagnoses.
I can just hear those doctors from the past going, "I went to medical school for this."
Exactly. So we don't taste anymore. Thank goodness. But yeah, so we do all those, all that observation with all of our senses. And then we make a hypothesis as to what we think is going on. And in medicine, we call it a differential diagnosis.
Oh.
So we think about what is it most likely? What else could it be? What is kind of the worst thing it could possibly be? And how are you going to make sure it's not that? And, so basically it's a persuasive paragraph that you write to yourself in the medical record. Like, I think this is what is going on because of X, Y, and Z. It could be also this, that, and the other thing, but I don't think it's this because of all these reasons. And then after your hypothesis, and I will tell you, sometimes the hypothesis is, I'm not sure what's going on here. It's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, I don't know. None of this really makes any sense. Like all of these things put together doesn't sound like anything that I know about, but you can say that, you can make your hypothesis, and then you do some tests. So sometimes there are blood tests.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are urine tests. Sometimes there are x-rays or other kinds of imaging. And all of this information, when you get those results back, will either support or, you know, disprove your hypothesis for what is going on.
Wow. And you have to do all this in like 30 minutes or so when you in your office visit.
Yes. So most of the time you can do all of it except for the testing. The testing, right. You will draw the blood, but you won't get the results immediately. And same with the imaging, unless we can do x-rays in my office. So you can see, you can get the x-ray and take a look at it a few minutes later on the computer screen. So that's good.
That's also technology, because that never used to be. It used to take a lot longer.
When I first started at my practice, they would make actual x-rays and we would have a light box in the hallway.
Yep.
We'd run downstairs, get the x-ray and put it up on the light box. And it was like so low tech compared to what we do nowadays. Yeah. And then, and nowadays, a lot of times by the time I see the x-ray on the computer, there's a radiologist that is not in the building, that is somewhere else, who has already read it and put a report in there. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah. It's really neat. Yeah. And so then you follow up on all those things and, you know, sometimes you know what the answer is. Sometimes you don't, but you may not know what the answer is, or it's something like you have a virus and we think it just made you sick for a while, but we think you're going to get better. That kind of thing. And then a lot of times what I do is, how am I going to follow up with this person? Sometimes I'm worried about them, like their blood pressure was super high or something else was going on that needed to be addressed immediately, but they didn't need to go to an emergency room or a hospital or anything. And I'll just say, let's start this medication and I'll see you back in 3 days. And I want to know how you're doing, or I'll call you. And sometimes if something is bad, you know, something is weird on the labs or something is wrong with the imaging, then I have to send them to some other place. But most of the time, depending on what it is, I can make some sort of a determination and give them some sort of treatment and tell them if they don't feel better in a certain amount of time to let me know.
Wow. Dr. Rajani, we're going to ask you for a challenge. That we love to challenge our kids. This is a totally interactive show. But before I do, this is going to sound silly, but what was like the weirdest thing you diagnosed in your career?
If you can tell us.
Yes. You don't have to tell us any names.
What is the weirdest thing? This is not necessarily the weirdest thing, but I will just tell you that sometimes I feel like things happen for a reason. It has nothing to do with me. I had somebody hurt themselves, like fell down and like hurt themselves in the chest, like, you know, their ribs hurt. And we did rib x-rays and they were fine. And, but the person still had a lot of pain. I was like, okay, so there's something called a CAT scan, which is like a 3D x-ray that you can do. And, so I was like, okay, it's been like long enough and you're not better. So let's find out if you have, you know, any broken ribs. So the CAT scan showed that they did have broken ribs and that was the cause of their discomfort. But it also showed on the other side, nothing to do with the ribs, that they had a cancer that we never would have found.
Wow.
Ever, 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 if they had not fallen down and broken their ribs.
Thank goodness they fell down and broke their ribs.
Yeah. That's a very good thing.
Because it wouldn't have been, there were no symptoms of that. So I was just like, okay, well, there's a reason why you fell down. So now we know. Mm-hmm. And they're fine. That person is fine.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So how can we challenge our kids? Can we get them to start shining the light from their cell phones through their parents' fingers to find out their blood saturation levels?
I mean, they could do that. I'm not sure it would give them the correct answer, but there are some ways to measure vital signs that are pretty easy without any specific equipment. So one thing we can do is measure each other's heart rates. And the way that I like to do it is to take two fingers, my index finger and middle finger, and put my hand down on a table with my palm facing up, and then take those two fingers and put them on my wrist just underneath where my thumb is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm alive.
And you can feel a little pulse there. So if you set a timer for a minute and you count the number of pulses you feel, that is a person's heart rate. Because we measure heart rate in beats per minute. And so we could challenge our listeners to measure their heart rate and then any other family members who would like to participate. And you could write down people's names and their heart rate when they're just sitting there hanging out. And then for an extra challenge, if you want to, you could have people do jumping jacks for a minute and then measure their heart rate again and see what happens.
Cool.
That's very cool. So kids, if you want to do this at home, we would love to hear about it, what your heart rate is. You have to ask your parents and you can tag us on our social media, which is at KidSolve on Twitter and Instagram, or maybe draw a picture of yourself jumping up and down with your heart rate and we'll show them to Dr. Rajani. And I bet she would love to see all of your pictures.
I would love that.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on Solving for Kids, Dr. Rajani.
Yeah, it's been great having you.
I love being here. Thank you so much.
Whoa, Jennifer, that was, like, fascinating.
I know, right? I mean, think of all of the questions and all of the problems you have to solve just by looking at the person and asking them all these questions. This is, like, the ultimate in problem-solving, being a doctor.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that medicine has advanced so far that now doctors don't need to taste anything nasty to figure out what you got.
I think Dr. Rajani is also appreciative of that, yes.
Well, this is really exciting. I know that you have a whole bunch of material that kids and families can look at on the website, solveitforkids.com.
Yes. So everybody do the challenge, find your heart rate, and then go to the website and look up more things. We're going to put some more activities that kids can do if they're really curious about how doctors can diagnose you with all of these different things. Our website, again, is solveitforkids.com. And if you do the challenge, you can leave us a note on our Twitter or Instagram, which is @KidSolve. We would love to hear from you.
Yes, and we would love to see you next week for the next exciting episode of Solve It for Kids.